scrambles left, winds up right behind. He's got time at the 10 to the 5. Yes! To the end zone. Touchdown. Darren Sproles gone. Touchdown.
This is the Root NY Podcast, talking all things NFL. Now here's your hosts, Root NY.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Root NY. My name is Josh Y. Josh Root is away this week, and I'm also going away this weekend, so it's a Thursday night show early on in the week, but we'll be back next week, both Root and I. We're speaking to Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com. They're doing amazing work over there, and Sigmund's been around for ages, so we're really pumped to have him on. If you don't know who Sigmund Bloom is, you probably shouldn't be playing fantasy against us, because we're using all his expertise. And then the following week, we're also joined by Rumford Johnny, another fantasy football legend. He hosts the Rummy and Ray pod. We recommend listening to that. And the following week, we speak to Rich. I can't pronounce his surname, so I'm going to ask him that when he comes in. But he's also known as Lord Reeves. He does seriously some spectacular fantasy football previews for fakefootball.com. They're team-by-team previews. I thoroughly recommend them. And then from next week, we're formally a partner with Aussie Audible. So keep an eye out for that. And the links we post, there'll be some free audiobooks, a couple of sporting ones. I know my guest today will be happy with one. There's a Peyton Manning one, but we'll get to him later. We've got some really, really good iTunes reviews, especially one from Jake, which we'll read on next week's show. Woot particularly likes to read them, so I don't want to rob him of that joy in this episode. And another announcement for us is our mailing list. Sorry, we've got a lot of housekeeping to begin the show, but we're just going to get out of the way because we've got some footballs back, so we've got some chock-a-block action on the show. But our mailing list, basically, this is something that all Aussie-US sports fans will want to join. We'll be sending out a weekly newsletter that goes through all the details of our tournaments through TopBetter, our top betting, gambling tournaments, any competitions we're running such as Gridiron Challenge, Fantasy Football. And we're going through promotions and freebies that we'll be running through our various partners during the NFL and also some NBA stuff as well. So there's going to be all sorts of competitions we'll run. We'll update people who's on the leaderboard, and we'll also share some of the our favorite articles that we've read during the week. So lots of that. So please email rootandwire@gmail.com. Just reply with the word yes, as in you want to join the mailing list, or tweet us, and then we'll give you a follow and we'll DM you and exchange emails that way. But also, let's get to today's show. We're speaking NFL injuries. And look, we're not backed by a huge conglomerate such as ESPN or the NFL Network. So we've got a budget. So our doctor, we don't have Stefania Bell or Dr. Gene Bramall, but we have Dr. Luke Smidmore on the line. How are you going, Luke?
I'm good, thanks, Josh. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for the kind introduction. I'm kind of a doctor the same way that someone like Shane Ray is an NFL linebacker. I'm not getting paid for my time on the field yet, but there's a bit of a training camp to go, and in a few months I'll be finished up with medical school, and we'll see what happens from there.
Awesome, that's really cool. So you're now the official doctor of the Woot and Why Show. So any more injuries that are coming up, we're going to speak to you. So unfortunately, you do have a stellar beard and strong hair game, but you know Stefania Bell in the looks department, but we'll try our best. But you're going to speak to us about Victor Cruz, Sam Bradford, Lamar Houston, Todd Gurley, and JPP quickly before we dig into some training camp storylines. And look, we've got your typical ones with Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett and things like that. But we've also got some really in-depth stuff. You play offensive line for the Central Coast Sharks, so we're going to dig into some offensive line talk, which I know everybody loves that. It's sexy. But before we do that, we'll just get into some NFL news. All right, Jalen Strong has apparently dropped 20 pounds since the draft. There was reports that his conditioning during the combine wasn't the best. He was 217 pounds, so he reckons his combine weighing was 217, and he tweeted he now weighs 211, which I don't understand where the 20 pounds comes from. But anyway, do you think that's important for Jalen Strong in your medical opinion, Luke, and then a personal opinion?
Well, I think, I think it's obviously going to be really hard for NFL players to manage their weight over the off season. I mean, this is the first time that someone like Jalen Strong's been away from his trainers or from, you know, from college trainers, and he's yet to meet up with his NFL trainers full time. So I guess, you know, managing your weight and how much you're working out and how much you're eating, I mean, it's probably the first time he's, you know, doing it on his own for some time now. So you can see why this happens. You know, there's plenty of other players in the NFL who struggle with this. Look, once he's into training camp and working with the team, I really can't see it as a problem moving forward.
No, and at least he's not putting on weight like Kelvin Benjamin. I don't know how it'll affect his lack of ability to separate, which was my concern for him coming out into the draft. So we'll wait and see. The bigger issue for him is the lack of talent at the quarterback position. We'll move on to another rookie deal. And how does the term offset language sound to you? Is that something that's really spicy, really saucy? Does that get your blood going?
For me, I don't know why people worry about all this contract stuff. Really, what's important about Marcus now is that the team has faith in him. He's been to all of the sessions. Everyone seems to love him. And, you know, they're just going to keep building the team around him. This is all the behind-the-scenes stuff that people, you know, want to try and talk about. But at the end of the day, it's what's on the field that really matters.
Exactly. It just dragged on way too much. I was getting sick and tired of hearing about partial offsets and them compromising on it. The main thing is that it's done in time for training camp, and the Colts have two more players to sign before training camp starts, but they don't start till later in July at 31st, I believe. So they've got a week to handle theirs, but there wasn't a second overall pick. So, look, it's just lack of stories in July for people to talk about. So we'll move on to some players that are in some real trouble. If your surname's Hunter, you have not had a good week in the NFL. Justin Hunter was arrested for felonious assault in Virginia. The place, July 3 incident took place at the Sandbar Raw Bar. What a name that is. He's been in jail, spent the night in jail, and he's been released. So, look, he's on the hot seat with the Titans, with Doriel Green-Beckham there, Trey McBride, Harry Douglas also there. This is Hunter's last chance. He's been promising so much for so many seasons now, and I think it could be all over for Justin Hunter. And then Wayne Hunter lasted 21 days on the Buffalo Bills roster. He spent 2 years out of the league, and now he can go back doing whatever he did do for the last 2 years. We'll move on to the next little bit of news. AP and the Vikings signed an extension. I'm not going to go into details. Look, if you're a good player, you're going to get paid big bucks. I don't really care about the money issue or X player earns more than Y player. Whatever, debate that all night. Greg Rosenthal's tweet, I think, is the best way to sum it up. He said, "So Adrian Peterson got his new deal from the Vikings. Being great, always the best leverage." Would you agree that's the best summation, Luke?
Absolutely, and I think another way of looking at this is his average, you know, with it all being fully guaranteed over the next 2 years, is kind of in the same ballpark as Dez and Demaryius' deal. And, I mean, Adrian Peterson, I mean, I think it's fair to say that he's on a different level than maybe even both those players. I mean, he's shown that he can put a team literally and figuratively on his back and take it to the playoffs. So really for the Vikings, who've got so many good young players still on their rookie deals who are relatively inexpensive, this is an absolute bargain for them,
yep.
All things considered. So, you know, exactly as Greg said, great players get paid. So yep. Let's move forward.
That's it. And it's good he'll probably finish his career with the Vikings at his age. The last bit of news is pretty much sums up off-season. Chris Cooley, who turned 33 10 days ago, walked away from the NFL in 2012 and hopped into the radio booth and has done some media with the Redskins, has now said that he at least be open to the idea of getting himself back into football shape and thinks he's a chance he'll get a free agent workout. Do you think Chris Cooley, A, has any comeback chances, and B, has still got it in the tank?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, we just don't know whether he has it in the tank. What's so hard is that, you know, being in football shape, as people say, is such a completely astronomically different level of fitness and conditioning that, you know, the average gym goer or, you know, casual jogger has. So, I mean, really, Chris Cooley's probably more well known for his character and his personality. I mean, he has been to a Pro Bowl and shown that he's an effective player. But, I mean, I don't know why you'd want to get back into football, you know, risk an injury when you can have a job in media and, you know, get paid to talk about football. That sounds pretty good to me.
That sounds terrific, I think so. And that story, I think, is living proof that we need football back ASAP. And I think let's just get straight into it. Football is back.
It's showtime.
All right, let's get into some injury talk. This is right up your alley. We'll try and be quick so we can get straight into the NFL injuries. But let's start with JPP, who is a 9 out of 10 type bloke at the moment, missing that index finger. What do we know? And I hear you watched the surgery or a similar surgery on YouTube.
Yeah, so as you mentioned in last week's show, as soon as this came out, I wanted to know exactly what went down. The term used by our friend Dr. Gene Bramall was that he had a ray resection surgery, which involves removing the entire finger. Now, as far as we know, as well as other hand injuries, JPP has fractures to his thumb as well. And it's important to know that although this will have an impact on his play, it's impossible for it not to. Players have made NFL appearances. For example, Von Miller's game against the Bears in his Defensive Rookie of the Year season in 2011, wearing full hand casts. So, I mean, there's kind of a precedent there where there isn't really a precedent with a pass rusher, you know, losing an entire finger. And also, it's also important to know that many NFL offensive and defensive linemen buddy strap their fingers. This is something which I've done in the past as well, to protect their fingers. So they don't use the full dexterity of all five fingers, but obviously you're going to lose some grip strength. But as we found out over the last few weeks, the pointer finger is last in the grip strength finger power rankings. So from a, you know, sporting and medical standpoint, this is going to be an interesting storyline to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. The grip strength finger power rankings is one of my favorite segments ever on television. We'll move on to Todd Gurley. Just briefly, in general, we also had a Twitter question. You may be able to address it in this response with regards to ACL injuries. So, Todd Gurley, what's your thoughts on his chances? He's starting the season on the NFI list, but we've been expecting that. Give us your take on Todd Gurley.
Yeah, so Todd Gurley, he did his ACL about 8 months ago. 9 months is the current time quoted for players to return post that injury. So my take is whether he's available for week one or not, it's safe to expect he'll be worked in over the first part of the season anyway. So that question you mentioned, that was from one of your followers, Daryl Turner.
Mm-hmm.
He was asking about the long-term issues from injury. Post-surgery, like such as these knee ligament reconstructions, the alignment of the long bones in the leg is off by just enough for the player to have to get used to kind of walking on it again. Also, you know, having to recondition the muscles that have been left idle after the surgery. And it's this little change in alignment that puts pressure on the structures in the knee just slightly differently. Which can lead down to the wearing down of cartilage, which, you know, we all know as arthritis, and possibly injuring the knee meniscus. So this is kind of why after a surgery, you know, players have to be careful, and there's that propensity for them to injure themselves again. So
okay. So you mentioned arthritis. So it can actually increase your chances of arthritis. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think that, and I mean, obviously, all these players who are putting so much pressure through their knees, many players in the NFL, you know, live and play with arthritis now, even in their 20s and 30s. But, yeah, when you mess around with all the different vectors and pressures, you know, this kind of, you know, can lead to some of this stuff, which, you know, as we know, as people age, is kind of inevitable anyway. It just kind of speeds up that process.
All right, well, thanks for that, you know, expertise. A lot of big words such as meniscus in there that I would struggle at to spell. So good stuff from you, Mr. Doctor. Dennis Pitta is another player that's often injured. Look, I honestly think he may not play a snap this season. What's your thoughts on him? It's two separate hip fractures and dislocations.
Well, I mean, hip fractures and dislocations is kind of a rare injury for someone of his age and even playing the sport that he's playing. So there isn't a lot of precedent here. So we don't really know a whole lot about whether he, you know, is able to come back at all even. So, even though Pitta was, you know, quite a good player for the Ravens, I think what they've done is they're just kind of, you know, not really depending on him being able to come back and play at, you know, the level he's played at before in, you know, selecting Max Williams out of the draft. So, yeah, I think as we've talked about previously, if Pitta can contribute at all, this is going to be a big bonus for the Ravens.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned ACL when we talked about Gurley, so we'll jump straight into Sam Bradford, who's torn his left ACL twice now. What's your thoughts on him? And there was reports that he was hobbling at training camp and things like that, and now there's a report from NJ.com saying that he's good to go for camp. So you mentioned the wear and tear over time. It's such a, and precedence as well with Pitta is such a rare thing. We've never seen a quarterback come back from two left ACL injuries. So how confident are you that he will play at, you know, and the knee will hold up, you know, throughout the season?
Well, as we know, with a right-handed quarterback, a lot of the power and drive and even accuracy comes from putting power through that front left leg. So, I mean, Bradford's ACL is about as critical of a ligament in his body as any, unfortunately.
Sorry, Eagles fans.
I know. But, I mean, look, when reporters report on injuries, you know, good to go, you know, really can mean so many different things in the, you know, the rehab process of an injury and surgery like this. But the return from injury after a second surgery is more difficult, and with each successive injury, there's more scar tissue, there's more potential for cartilage and meniscus damage, and these little dents and nicks accumulate both over time, even if a player doesn't have a distinct injury, and with each individual injury. So the rehab process involves cusping the knee to this slightly different alignment that I mentioned earlier, reconditioning all the muscles that are left idle, and doing this for a second time is definitely more challenging. And there's you know, a lot more pressure, I mean, for him, you know, in terms of his contract situation, the team he's with. So I mean, I really wouldn't want to be in the mind of Sam Bradford right now. I think
it's a mysterious and dark place right now, I believe.
I think so.
The mind of Sam Bradford must be, for him, it's probably one of the most pressure on a player heading into the season. It's just with this, you need to perform well to get your next big contract, or your career is basically on the line. It's one of those situations where, look, he's a first round selection, so even if something does happen again, there's always a chance he'll find a backup job somewhere, but his days as a starter may be numbered. So it is crazy. And when you mention good to go is such a generic term, all I want to hear about is if someone is 100% ready. I don't care if you're 99%, 98%. I want to hear 100%.
Absolutely.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for a quarterback, a new quarterback, a quarterback who keeps being told he's unproven, and someone coming off injury, confidence is huge for all of these scenarios, and Sam Bradford's facing all of them at the one time. Mm. And, you know, again, and he doesn't have, you know, the relationships with his teammates and his coaches that he may have had if he was in somewhere he's been for a couple of years. So, I mean, I wish him all the best, and, you know, all that we hear about Sam Bradford is that he's an excellent character guy, but this is certainly a big challenge for him personally.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned having that confidence. Hesitation in sports when you're coming back from an injury often is, you know, increases your risk of being injured, because you're not going at it 100%, and you can create that doubt. I mentioned the 100% thing is because we keep hearing Victor Cruz and percentages over the last few months. What can you tell us briefly about Victor Cruz, and if, you know, the reports are that we will expect to see him play in at least one preseason game. So what's your thoughts on Victor Cruz?
So, I mean, we've been talking about ACL injuries, which are ligament injuries. Victor Cruz has a tendon injury. A tendon is a structure that connects muscle to bone, and a ligament is a structure that connects bone to bone. The difference is that a ligament is kind of a fibrous and an inelastic structure, whereas a tendon is a dynamic structure. And in this particular instance, your patellar tendon is a long structure that involves massive muscle groups in the thigh, also known as quads bra, and reconstructing and rehabilitating this is a far more involved, lengthy, and also an unpredictable process when you compare it to an ACL injury. So lots of outlets reporting this and reporting it correctly. And really, for Victor Cruz, we don't really know what is going to happen until we see him in the preseason. So yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the storylines to watch in the Giants training camp in preseason. The last little bit of news, I had a question from a listener. Basically, he just wanted to know an update on Lamar Houston. And look, he's been, from what I could find, he's been rehabbing and he was practicing solo during OTAs. So not there's no contact really in OTAs, but he was doing individual workouts at OTAs. And he's expected to be ready for training camp. So that's the news on Lamar Houston. All right, let's get into training camp previews.
I'm ready to go in, coach. Just give me a chance.
And we'll start with the Bills quarterback competition. Basically, one of the key training camp battles that everyone is aware of. Look, we talked about this with Colleen Wolf a month ago, and both Woot and Colleen said, oh, now I expect Matt Castle to take the job. And I said Tyrod Taylor, and they all laughed at me. You know, they made snide remarks and rubbed it in my face, but now we're hearing that Matt Castle is on the roster bubble and Tyrod Taylor is a dark horse. Your thoughts on that with Tyrod Taylor? And then also we've got EJ Manuel in there, who was an early round quarterback. Maybe with Greg Roman, it could be somewhat of a career revival. I can't expect him to become an all pro, but he could be somewhat serviceable.
I was just about to mention EJ first. Yeah. I mean, I think now there's reports coming out that him working with Doug Marrone wasn't a really effective marriage. And although
Doug Marrone wasn't really effective in any capacity, he thought he could get a better head coaching job. And what is he, like an O-line assistant at Jacksonville now? It's shocking. Yeah,
it's a pretty big fall from grace. Yes. Although the thing is that we know what Rex Ryan is like with quarterbacks, and you know the fact that he isn't. And really, this comes down to who Greg Roman thinks he can get the most out of. I do remember back in Tyrod Taylor's Baltimore days that Ray Lewis on the sideline referred to him as the human highlight reel. So, I mean, maybe whisperings of Vic 2.0, but, I mean, look, really, there's so many weapons around whoever the quarterback is and such a good defense, potentially a really good running game, which everyone keeps talking about. But really, all they need is someone who's not going to lose games for them, and you know, maybe create a couple of plays. Really, I would kind of prefer to see EJ Manuel take this one.
Yeah, I agree, and I never thought I'd say that in 2015 that I'd rather see EJ Manuel on the field. But I just Matt Castle does not excite me in any way.
So uninspiring.
He's so uninspiring. I can't believe he won 11 games with the Patriots. It just shows you how good Bill Belichick is. All right,
I was just about to say I can absolutely believe he won 11 games with the Patriots because all their success comes from the head coach, not the quarterback. But moving on.
I look around and I think we got a
spice. Luke dropping spicy bombs on the show. All right, we'll move on to the Seattle offensive line because I find this a huge talking point for me. This is massive for me because Seattle have a tough schedule to start the season and getting some consistency out of their offensive line, it could be a glaring weakness, especially when they run the ball as much as they do. Max Unger is gone from the center position, and a lot of people point to me, oh, you know, but they won, you know, they were 8-1 without Max Unger last year and all that. But look, he's out of there permanently. You're stuck with Lamil Jean-Pierre, who was very average for Seattle when he filled in for Max Unger in weeks 13 to 16. Himself, J.R. Sweezy, and Justin Britt, all graded below average on Pro Football Focus. And in the draft, they addressed two guards and an offensive tackle, so three offensive linemen in sort of a group of 100 picks. They took Terry Poole, offensive tackle from San Diego State, Mark Glonowski from West Virginia, guard, and Christian Sokolaki? I don't know. Sokoli?
Sokoli,
there you go. Just dropping stutters all over the place. But there may be a circumstance where Seattle are starting two rookies on the offensive line. Alvin Bailey doesn't excite me at all. J.R. Sweezy and Justin Britt do not excite me at all. Russell Okung is the only player in that line with an average or better rating on Pro Football Focus and from what I could see just on tape. He is the only guy that, and he has injury concerns himself. So for me, this offensive line is a huge talking point. And watching how Paul Glenowskins and Mr. Christian, I can't even, I'm struggling with his surname.
Sokoli.
Pans out is something that, for me, is really, really interesting. As an offensive lineman, your thoughts on this Seattle situation?
Well, I mean, luckily for Seattle, they have the most offensive line-proof running back in the NFL in Marshawn Lynch, and he's able to beat away the heavier defensive linemen that the offensive linemen usually take care of. Maybe not so much in the case of this offensive line, but, I mean, they can't rely on him forever. He's not going to be around forever. And as soon as Russell Wilson starts to eat up more of this cap space, the Seattle Seahawks, to be successful over the next, you know, year or two or even 5 years, they need cheap players to produce on the offensive line. Now, this is achieved through either drafting, signing, or coaching well. And, you know, really, they need some of these young players to step up and play above their pay grade for them to be an effective offense. We know their defense is going to be good. We know that their running game is going to be good, but that's only because of Marshawn Lynch. And also Russell Wilson's running ability in the read option really does help him, Marshawn Lynch that is, you know, get down the field without seeing a defender for at least a few yards. And yes, even running himself, Russell does. So, I mean, really, yeah, you're right. This is really interesting moving forward, and someone has to step up here. Otherwise, this offense is going to crumble.
Absolutely. And look, when I want to ask you this question. If you have two below average guards and your guards are a weakness, how important is it to, you know, how much does having a solid, rock solid, you know, all pro center in between two average guards help, you know, iron out weaknesses? Because if you have, you know, that whole interior line is terrible, you're just going to get a lot of inside presence. So how important is having a center like sort of Max Unger, you know, iron out the weakness from, say, Alvin Bailey and a J.R. Sweezy?
Well, not only does a center lead the offensive line in pre-snap reads, helping the quarterback navigate the defense, but anyone who knows about offensive line will tell you that pressure through the A-gaps, which is the spaces between the center and each guard,
mm-hmm.
destroys any offense, whether it is on a passing or running down. Pressure up the middle takes away those inside runs that the running game needs to be based on, and it also disrupts the pocket, which quarterbacks traditionally prefer. Luckily for Russell Wilson, he's quite a good quarterback rolling out.
Yep.
But, I mean,
one of the best.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, to have an effective passing game, you need to have a clean pocket, and that A-gap pressure is what really, really disrupts that. So having strength across the middle is really important. Everyone talks about the blind side and the left tackle, and I agree that's of extremely high importance, but it's this A-gap pressure that's such an issue, and that's why defensive tackles who can penetrate and beat double teams on the line and get that A-gap pressure are worth so much in the NFL.
Hmm. All right, we'll move on from the Seattle offensive line, which, you know, good luck, Russell. If you want your contract extension, playing behind, you know, one of the worst offensive lines in the leagues may prove a good bargaining tool. But we'll move on to another young quarterback, and that's Andrew Luck. And a lot of questions I've heard on other publications is what's the impact of Philip Dorsett's drafting? For me, it's not really an impact at all. Look, they went best player available, and people are worried what impact that may have on T.Y. Hilton. All reports are that they're going to try and re-sign Hilton. For me, Andre Johnson is a stopgap for two maybe three seasons. So ultimately, the trio of Hilton, Moncrief, and Dorsett are your future at wide receiver. But the problem heading into this season is how will they feed all these hungry mouths that want attention? And I know Andre Johnson is probably the most hungry of them all. And same with T.Y. Hilton wanting a new deal. So there's a lot of people that want to catch passes. What's your thoughts on how they'll feed all the hungry mouths before I maybe explore what I think may happen? We might be on the same page here, I think.
I mean, I think we're usually on the same page for this topic particularly. But really, it comes down to the fact they're going to throw the ball a lot.
Yes.
but it's not really, hard. But the thing is that the Colts, you know, they will run a lot of three wide receiver packages, which means you need four serviceable wide receivers. What this does is it offers a lot of personnel packages for Pat Hamilton to work with, and a lot of personnel packages for opposing defensive coordinators to have to prepare for. It gives the Colts options, it gives them flexibility, and for a team with such high aspirations as the Colts have, injury protection is critical. And usually it isn't the best team that wins in the playoffs, it's the healthier team. There are countless examples of this, some which come to mind are the NFC Championship game that the Patriots lost in Denver 2 years ago. They were hampered by injury. And also when Le'Veon Bell was out in the playoffs last year, the Ravens beat the Steelers. And really, if you have four quality wide receivers and you know, a pair of quality tight ends as well, you can expect the Colts to have a prolific offense all the way from week one deep into the playoffs, and that's really what they want.
Absolutely. And you mentioned sub-packages, and Pep Hamilton loves changing it up, loves having all these different looks and layouts. Remember, they had Reggie Wayne lining up all over the field, so now you've got Dorsett doing the exact same, Moncrief and Hilton, that can line up all over the place. I really like the fact that they can do that. And when you think about it, if you do line up four wide receiver set with Hilton, Johnson, Moncrief, and Dorsett, and then Frank Gore running back, what are you going to do? Like, are you going to put eight men in the box and try and stop Frank Gore, or are you going to, you're going to single cover all these incredibly quick wide receivers? It's just going to open up massive running lanes for Frank Gore. He is going to have a hell of a season, because he's always been used to having the most stacked boxes in San Fran. I can't remember the stat that I heard, but he had some of the most sort of eight-man looks of any running back over the last few seasons. So he is going to see some lanes. He's going to be like a Mini Cooper on the M5 with no traffic. He's just going to be flying, absolutely flying. All right, we'll move on to some more offensive line talk, because I know how much it gets your hard. And Cameron Irving is a player that I really liked. I loved Cameron Irving. Look, you're a Broncos fan. I actually wanted the Broncos to take Cameron Irving in the draft.
Me too.
Unfortunately, did not slide, and the Cleveland Browns took him, which offered a lot of mixed response, but this is one of the most solid units in the NFL. The question I want to know, and what we'll see during training camp, is where will Cameron Irving play? Because when you look at this guy, you got an all-pro potential Hall of Famer in Joe Thomas at left tackle. You have one of the most underrated rookie seasons ever in the NFL in Joel Bitonio last year playing at left guard. Alex Mack, who I know you are a huge fan of, as am I, playing at center. John Greco is an above-average guard, had a solid season last year, and Mitchell Schwartz at right tackle, who is probably the person you think that Irving may slot in over than Schwartz, but he isn't the worst right tackle. Like, if you put Mitchell Schwartz, on the Seattle line, he would probably be their second best defensive lineman. So it's definitely interesting. So where do you see Cameron Irving playing and lining up during training camp?
Well, I mean, during training camp, I'm not really too sure, but I think what the Browns are doing here is they'll play him at multiple positions in training camp, as he has experience across the whole line.
Mm-hmm.
But really, what they're doing here is they're following the same philosophy that the Colts are with their wide receivers. It's injury protection. I mean, the Browns don't have the same aspirations as the Colts, but, you know, everyone wants to win games, and this is one way to do it, is to draft best player available. Even if you have a strong offensive line, getting a good offensive lineman is still getting a good offensive lineman.
Absolutely.
And really, I think this has a little bit to do with what happened last offseason with Mac, potentially being signed away by the Jags and the Browns matched his offer. If Mac, really puts his foot down and wants to get out of Cleveland, he had a fractured fibula last season, which is a broken leg,
yes.
Which is usually a relatively simple injury, but maybe he takes a little bit more time, and he's, you know, or he doesn't feel himself, and Irving can slot right in there.
Absolutely. It is great insurance for Alex Mack, and that's what I thought when they drafted Irving, that maybe Mack's, you know, it's insurance for Mack, and long-term, maybe they expect Mack to leave, and they are, when you're Cleveland, you've got to think long-term. Obviously, your aspirations aren't for this season. They could be potentially, I think, picking in the top two or three at the end of the year, unfortunately, as much as, you know, everyone has a soft spot for Cleveland. But yeah, for me, watching where Irving slots in at training camp, I think John Greco and Mitchell Schwartz will be looking over their shoulder desperately. But competition's so healthy for a team. If John Greco and Mitchell Schwartz are playing absolutely lights out to keep Cameron Irving off the field, then you're getting a lot better production out of your team.
I think it's worth mentioning that Cleveland have three running backs that they're going to be trying to run the ball with, taking pressure off Josh McCown or Johnny Manziel, is it?
Who's that? Huh?
and so I think Cameron Irving will be seeing work as a swing tackle. So
yeah, absolutely. You
know, lining up six offensive linemen so they can really pound the ball in the ever physical AFC North, which we hear so much about.
Yes, and we can't forget that David Bowie's brother Michael is also also solid tackle there, so he plenty of depth for Cleveland. I think if you're expecting a team to run the ball a lot, I think Dallas last year, I think that will be the similar game plan for Cleveland in 2015. We'll keep the O-line love going, but this may be the end of our O-line chatter for today. It is, so I apologize, Luke, that there wasn't more, but if listeners are still awake listening to offensive line chatter, then trust me, there's a lot of wide receiver talk, secondary, and some Patriots chatter coming up. So we'll continue with the Rams' offensive line. They drafted four offensive linemen and then five, if you can't count Isaiah Battle, who they took in the supplemental draft, who we'll note is going to be redshirted. But looking at their offensive line, they've got Greg Robinson, Roger Saffold, Tim Barnes, who wasn't awful last year, but wasn't great, and Barrett Jones from Alabama, who's got a lot of a lot of love by analysts, but just haven't seen enough for him. So there is a potential that we may see two, maybe three rookies play some solid snaps for the Rams in 2015. They took Rob Havenstein, a favorite of mine from Wisconsin, who after he got drafted, analysts destroyed St. Louis. They were going crazy. They called it a seventh round selection in the second round, so they weren't happy with that. And then the same with Jamon Brown. They backed up two back-to-back picks, and I think on Walter Football they said, "Can someone tell St. Louis they're not in round seven? It's day two," which I found hilarious. And then Andrew Donald from Iowa and Cody Wichman from CSU. So looking at that offensive line, what do you see emerging out of that? I don't know if you've watched a lot of St. Louis tape. I don't blame you if you haven't, because St. Louis are one of the most boring offenses in the NFL. Actually, they're probably the most boring offense in the NFL. Do you see any of these rookies potentially starting? I think Havenstein at right tackle may be a lock.
Yeah, I think really that's the most likely. But what really jumps out to me here is, Havenstein from Wisconsin, Donald from Iowa, Wichman from CSU. Those are three really big offensive line schools. These players, I think, not only will they bring what they bring as a player, but they'll bring their culture with them. And much like the Browns, the Rams have invested heavily in the running back position with Trey Mason. It was Trey Mason, probably the only exciting player on the Rams' offense, and obviously with Todd Gurley. So I think really their game plan is to run the ball a lot. And looking at what they had last year, some players with not a lot of NFL experience, and Greg Robinson, who they should be able to depend on, not having a good campaign last year.
Oh, he was awful.
I think they really want to run the ball. They want to run the ball a lot, and they thought, look, but we need a lot of offensive linemen to come in here and really compete for these positions. And I think picking from those kind of schools, I think, is really going to drive that offensive line culture. If it gels and works out, then, they could become a, dangerous physical running team. So but it's yet to be seen.
Yeah, I'd rather them develop over time. At least gets you know they got slammed for their draft picks, but as you said, if they pan out well and you know, have a good camp, have a good preseason, and get that unit sorted, and as you said, consistency and continuity for offensive linemen is so crucial. When you look at your teams like Green Bay and Dallas, they've had that over time, and it's easier to trust the person next to you when you've played alongside them a while. So,
but, yeah, and I think just before we move off the offensive line chat, if you for whatever reason don't think it's a sexy position in sports, just check out the Colts offensive lineman in the body issue, and I think you'll have your mind changed pretty quickly.
Yeah, when I saw that, I just went Michael Scott nuts. Costanza, oh boy.
Probably would.
All right, we'll move on to the Ravens wide receiver two position. Is Breshad Perriman the answer, or will Kamar Aiken fill that Torrey Smith void, or role? I just made up a new word, so you're welcome, English Dictionary. Steve Smith is certainly the wide receiver one role. We all know that. Marlon Brown looks sold to be the slot receiver with Michael Campanaro backing him up. But when you look at Perriman and Aikman, Aiken caught 26 passes from 36 targets last year. He had 290 yards and 4 touchdowns. Had a very good catch rate percentage of 72.2%. Obviously not a huge sample size with 36 targets and 26 catches, but the glimpses are there. You know, the trust is there with Flacco down the stretch. He relied on him, in the playoffs. With Perriman, it's all hype. You know, apparently ran a 4.1 unofficial 40. He averaged over 20 yards a catch at UCF. It's interesting to see who will carve out a role. For me, Perriman scares the hell out of me because of his dropsies. I don't like what I saw. He just had such mental blanks with drop passes, but the speed is so crazy you can't ignore. It's so easy speed, and with an arm like Joe Flacco, you can see it working out. But with Mark Trestman there, he might be able to coach that mental aspect game and get the confidence in Breshad Perriman. What's your thoughts on this position battle heading into camp?
The first thing I think about when I look at this is what kind of philosophy is this offense going to be running with? Are they going to fully adopt Trestman's strategy where, you know, we saw what he did in Chicago as well as completely mismanaged the team? he managed to get two wide receivers to be very productive, but then Kubiak system, which this team is used to, you know, doesn't require as many wide receivers to contribute with the pass-catching fullback and pass-catching tight end, which we've mentioned earlier. I think that, you know, yes, the wide receiver two and other wide receivers are obviously critical to an offense, but it's not as important as, say, the wide receiver two on the Packers or Colts. So, I mean, I think they can run some heavy set offense and, you know, let Steve Smith really rule the wide receiver role and kind of see what happens with these other wide receivers. And look, if, you know, a couple of them come on, then they can start using some more open packages with more wide receivers on the field. But with a good offensive line, a good running game, and a good quarterback, you can be a little bit more flexible with these things. So,
and we mentioned Trestman, and he's actually openly said that he's going to adopt his philosophy more to suit Kubiak, because he said it's easy for him to learn one system than his entire team to learn his system. So, I think that's very smart from Trestman, and I think with Kyle Juszczyk there, the pass-catching fullback, and Max Williams, and Crockett Gilmore, who's someone that sort of slid under the radar lately, yeah, I think they will run the ball well with Forsett and use more of a Kubiak scheme. So I think you're absolutely right that it's not as critical. Obviously, it was a need, and they addressed that in the draft, so they should be commended. But I just think we need to steady the brakes on the Perriman love, especially in fantasy heading into the season. It may take a while for him to come on. Pardon?
When it comes to fantasy, everyone's going to be on this rookie wide receiver train. Everyone, just calm down. I mean, unless you want to lose, which is fine as well.
Did you just call Breshad Perriman a Wookiee?
I mean, let's just roll with it.
Okay, cool.
Perriman.
Wookie Perryman. All right, we'll move on to the Steelers secondary. The post-Polamalu era is now upon us. The Steelers are starting Sharmenko. I keep saying Sharknado, which was on today. Sharknado 3, which was awesome. So they're starting Shamarco Thomas at strong safety and Mike Mitchell at free safety. Obviously, they still have William Gay at corner. Antoine Blake, the first half of the season was solid, and then he just played so bad the last half of the year. Just dropped off, fell off a cliff. Cortez Allen is awful. Should do it Jason Warlords and just walk out of that joint. And then they addressed the corner position twice in the draft at 56 overall and 121st overall in Senquez Golson, great name, and Doran Grant. So both are a little bit different to their philosophy in having tough, tall, physical corners. They drafted really small cornerbacks. So for me, watching training camp, I really want to see how Golson and Doran Grant, now I'm thinking of Duran, well, maybe Doran Grant will be hungry like the wolf and emerge in training camp, because William Gay and Cortez Allen just don't excite me. So I think for me, the question is, maybe will Golson or Grant emerge, to fill that Cortez Allen void?
Yeah, and even though William Gay is quite a good cornerback, he works mostly from the slot. And I think that having the rest of the secondary being so unproven, it's going to be difficult for this Steelers defense. I think a lot of teams are going to be chasing when they're playing the Steelers. They've got such a good offense. Teams are going to be passing on this defense. And it doesn't take a lot of football knowledge to know that you need a good secondary to stop the pass. So, I'm looking forward to seeing what shakes out here. But lots of other position groups around the league, there needs to be young players stepping up and filling roles, which hasn't happened in
Pittsburgh
for a long time. So it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and we talked about this last week, that the Steelers team is unrecognizable at the moment in defense. We failed to mention Lauren Timmons, who we completely forgot, which was, we apologize, Lawrence, if you're listening, because I know you are. It's just such a crazy team now to think that the Steelers' defense is not the Steel Curtain. It could possibly be the worst defense in that division, and that's including Cleveland. So expect a lot of shootouts and expect Ben Roethlisberger, as we said last week, to throw easily over 5,000 yards. Speaking of bad defense, we'll move over to the Bears, and they were the 32nd ranked defense last year. Were awful. So as much as the hate towards Jay Cutler is, fair probably, to a degree, you got to look at the defense, and they're completely changing their positions. And, you go on ourlads.com and then you go on Pro Football Focus and look at their depth charts for defense, and it is that they have the complete opposites on where they have players lining up and positions. So I think not many people know who's lining up at where, who's playing at outside linebacker or weak side, strong side. It's going to be tough to work out who's playing where, especially with Vic Fangio, and you've got a lot of players changing positions. When you look at their defense, Luke, what do you see? I see some strong position groups, but I also see some really weak ones.
Well, I mean, what they did manage to do was get Pernell McPhee, which is not a move that took many headlines over the offseason, but he's a really good, 3-4 outside linebacker, and the Ravens were able to get a lot of production out of him by moving him around and really switching things. But what really worries me about this linebacker group is that him and Sam Acho, who was signed from the Arizona Cardinals, are the only linebackers who have 3-4 experience at the NFL level, which is really scary. I mean, people might just see linebackers as linebackers, but when you have these, when you have these philosophy switches, positions have different responsibilities on different kind of downs, and there's lots of different personnel packages that change up. The nickel's completely different, and so it's really hard for these. Obviously they're professionals and they're very good at their job, but it's an added challenge for them in the off season, and for so many of these linebackers having to face that challenge, even the veterans on that defense, like Lamar Houston, Jared Allen, Willie Young, they've never played in the 4-3 at this the 3-4 at this level. So
absolutely,
it'll be interesting to watch. And yeah. I mean, it might work. Vic Fangio's proven that he can make things work, or they might be 32nd again.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they are, but I absolutely agree. And I think Eddie Goldman, that's the one position I'm confident he'll slot in at the nose tackle. But yeah, for the Bears, I'll be reading those training camp reports to find out, you know, who's lining up where. Is Lamar Houston actually going to be playing outside linebacker in a 3-4, or are they going to keep him in at end? And then obviously Pernell McPhee, we know, will be playing outside linebacker. But apart from that, there's not many spots up for grab. You mentioned Sam Acho, but him and McPhee will be competing probably for the same position. So it is definitely interesting to see how that'll pan out. All right, we'll get through a quick speed round, I guess, before we wrap up the show. We're heading into that hour mark. Another position battle in Pittsburgh that we as Australians are really invested in, and that's Wooten Wise Boys, Jordan Berry. We're a big fan of Jordan Berry. He's versing the incumbent Aussie punter Brad Wings. So we love a good punting battle. We like it. We're punters are people too here at Wooten Y, and I think everyone at Pro Kick Australia is on Team Jordan Berry, and Wooten Y is on Team Jordan Berry, and I think he has a realistic chance. Wing ranked 33rd amongst all punters by Pro Football Focus, so that means that a team had two punters better than him, and they must have sacked one or someone was injured before they moved him ahead. And then he only averaged 43.7 yards a punt and only landed 19 punts inside the 20 out of 61. Jordan Berry focuses heavily on his directional punting and hang time, which I think will benefit him. When you expect the offense to move the chains as well as they are, he'll be punting a lot, probably around the halfway mark. I don't see many punts inside the, you know, coming out of their own 20. Are you on Team Berry?
Well, look, I think being part of Gridiron here in Australia, I'm certainly for any Australian going over and giving the, firstly giving Gridiron a shot here in Australia. But, I mean, if you can take it and export yourself overseas, that's an incredible achievement. And really, when it comes to punting, it's going to come down to the training camp and the numbers. And hopefully, inevitably one of these young Aussies is cut, they can catch on to another team who
absolutely
are looking for another punter, and hopefully we can have 32 Australian punters in the NFL sometime soon.
Oh man, you have pipe dreams, man. alright, we'll jump straight into the Patriots cornerback. No Revis, no Brandon Browner, no Denard. We've got Logan Ryan, Super Bowl hero Malcolm Butler, and Robert McLean penciled in as the starters. McLean likely to play in the slot. They acquired Mr. Burnt Toast himself, Bradley Fletcher, in free agency, and they drafted Darrell Roberts, cornerback from Marshall, in round 7. With someone like Belichick, who knows if Darrell Roberts will pan out. But look, when the Patriots have won their Super Bowls, it's when they've had a top 15 defense. And with this secondary, I know they're strong at safety and at linebacker and in the front 7, but when you're lining up at, you know, Malcolm Butler, yes, he was a hero, made that one play, but that's such a small sample size from him. Going forward, as a Broncos fan, you'd be probably happy with this cornerback grouping.
I'm absolutely thrilled that Malcolm Butler and Logan Ryan will be matching up against Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders this year. But it shouldn't really surprise anyone that the Patriots win Super Bowls when their defense is good. But really, what the coaching staff is able to do in New England is nothing short of legendary. And we really don't know what's going to happen. But as you mentioned, if they manage to get any production out of this cornerback group, it's not really going to surprise anyone. And what they have working for them is a very good and an elite pairing of safeties in Patrick Chung and Devin McCourty back there, so they're going to get a lot of help over the top. So
absolutely,
perfect.
We'll move on to the Texans quarterback situation. We've got Ryan Mallett v Brian Hoyer. I sent out a couple of tweets about this yesterday, and I set the line. I said, you know, if I said Brian Hoyer was going to start 8 games, I'll set the line at 8 games for the Texans. Would you take the over or under? What would you reckon?
I think I'd probably take the over. I think that although Hoyer is in that kind of Matt Cassel area of being an inspiring player, but I think there's so much hype around Ryan Mallett, and in his limited duties last year, he did look good, but really, I mean, we just don't know.
Ryan Mallett's hype seems to only increase when he's off the field.
That's right.
The aura around this guy, having played two games, is ridiculous. It's crazy. It's nuts. And the more he's off the field, the more he seems to get hyped up. And now the hype has become greater than the man. So I'm going to start calling him Hype Mallett. He's awful. He's awful. Brian Hoyer, I think, will start at least 10 games easily. I don't think it is a battle. I think first week of Hard Knocks, Cleveland Springsteen, as Dan Hansis calls Brian Hoyer, will emerge, and I think he'll be a interesting Hard Knocks character. We love Brian Hoyer. We'll move from one crappy AFC South team to another one, and that's the Tennessee Titans. One of the listeners asked who we think will emerge between David Cobb or Bishop Sankey at the running back position. A lot of David Cobb love in fantasy drafts, often going before Sankey or back-to-back, actually. You know, you see Cobb and Sankey going back-to-back in drafts. But for me, I think it may take a little while for Cobb to emerge. I think they'll give Sankey a chance behind, the additions they've made to the offensive line, or the changes they've made to the offensive line, and then this new offense with Marcus Mariota, Dorial Green-Beckham, Trey McBride, and so on. So I actually think Sankey may emerge as the starter from camp. What's your thoughts on the thoroughly entertaining running back situation in Tennessee?
Well, I think this is one of the cases where a lot of people don't take into account the other two possibilities other than Cobb emerging or Sankey emerging. It could be both, and it could be none. I think that, for the millions of Titans fans around the world, I think that they would prefer both than none. There isn't a whole lot else going on the offense. I mean, there certainly could be, but as we mentioned with Justin Hunter earlier, DGB being, potentially volatile, and Marcus Mariota with all the hype and concerns, really we just don't know what is going to happen with this offense. There's far too many questions and there's not a lot of certainty. So I think it's going to be interesting, and for anyone picking any Titans running back in fantasy, you need to get your head checked.
I'll be serious. I took some digs in at the Texans and the Titans, but for me, all these changes on the Titans offense, I'm intrigued. I'm actually looking forward to seeing how it pans out in training camp. That's one thing I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, I think it's certainly interesting and intriguing, but whether they're going to be, a strong or even dominant NFL offense. I mean, a lot needs to happen here. Again, we'll see. And it's pretty easy for you to say as a Colts fan sitting on that throne of ease in the AFC South.
It's certainly one of my favorite divisions. It's in terms of strength of schedule. Now for the million-dollar question on everybody's minds. Can Jarrod Hayne make the 49ers roster? Just one word answer, please. No? Luke?
No. I think that's a really harsh.
I won't do that. It's not a knock on Hain, but look, you got hired, Carlos Hyde, Reggie Bush, Kendall Hunter, Mike Davis, currently ahead of Hain on the running back depth chart. It's tough for a team to carry five running backs on a roster. I don't see it happen very often. Unless, there's two starters that actually have injury concerns on a week to week, you'll see someone get promoted to the active roster, not sort of straight away after preseason. Then you look at the return game. It's clearly his best chance, and everyone was raving that Hayne was taking snaps at kick return, but Bruce Ellington was not healthy during OTAs. And if you follow Matt Mayoka from the CSN Bay Area, who is our Hayne correspondent, we'll be speaking to him after some various training camp dates and preseason dates, so stay tuned for that. Only the best for you guys on Wooten Wire in terms of Jarrod Hayne. But he's posted he posted an article and some videos of Bruce Ellington, who looks extremely healthy. And Bruce Ellington, is vying for that slot receiver role in in the offense. So he has definitely has roster value outside the return game. So, look, it's an uphill battle for Jarrod Hayne. Do you agree, Luke?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I realized in preparing for this show is that to actually make an NFL roster for a player who's played this game for their entire life and have lived and breathed football for years and years, I mean, just to make the roster is incredible. And I think if Jarrod Hayne somehow manages to do this, I think it's, you know, you need to start talking about it as an incredible achievement in Australian sport. Now, the difference between him and some of the many other Aussies in the NFL who you've talked to and talked about, you know, throughout the off-season is that, you know, he's making this change so late and he's already an established star in, you know, his sport of choice. So I think, you know, just looking at, you know, I mean, you know, 40 players from each team are going to be cut. And if you do the math on that, I mean, there's, what, about 1,000 NFL players that are going to be cut before even the start of the season. So yeah, it's going to be pretty incredible if he actually manages to achieve this.
Yeah, it's such an incredible amount of players that were cut that if the NFL is in Australia, it may affect the unemployment rate down here if the NFL is in Australia. That's how much players lose a job. Yeah. All right, well, thanks for coming on, Luke. That wraps up our storylines and things to watch heading into training camp. Obviously, there's a lot more stories. Every team has positions that are going to be battled. Every team has a position battle. We didn't get to look at the Broncos' offensive line, all the question marks there, even the Colts at right guard. So plenty of questions, but we tried to vary it up and mix it up and speak about things that you know you wouldn't hear on other shows. I don't think many other shows discuss the Rams offensive line. So I hope that's provided something a little bit different for our listeners. And you can follow Luke on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle, Luke?
My Twitter handle is Luke Charles S. Okay. So plug that in. That's also my handle on Instagram. And if you have any questions about the Broncos at any point in time, I'm definitely your guy to talk to about the Denver Broncos.
Absolutely. Shoot any ACL and meniscus questions to Luke's way as well. And that wraps up the show. So thank you very much, Luke, for coming on. Next week's show, please, we're speaking to Sigmund Bloom, so tweet us your fantasy football questions.
I just want to mention I'm very excited for the Sigmund Bloom appearance. He's definitely one of my favourite followers on Twitter and one of my favourite fantasy football writers. But I also want to put just a little plug in for American football down here in Australia. As Josh has mentioned before, I do play American football here in New South Wales. So if you have any questions or
want to sign up,
if you want to sign up, definitely talk to me. But if you have any questions or interest in the game in terms of maybe coming and watching a couple of games, certainly hit me up, or you can find Gridiron New South Wales on Facebook, as well as all the other state league pages on Facebook pretty easily. So if you're interested in the NFL, you can get some homegrown action here. Just come and check us out.
Absolutely. I'll try the outro again. Luke cut me off, which will provide some hilarity on when you listen back to this show, Luke, because you cannot hear me hitting music.
Oh, no.
All good. All good, man. So, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at JYNFL. You can follow Luke on Twitter at LukeCharlesS. Woot on Twitter at Josh Woot. Follow the show at Woot and Why. We are on Facebook, The Woot and Why Show. Instagram at NFL Podcast. Podbean, iTunes, please give us reviews. Stitcher, and buy a shirt on Redbubble. Come on, do it. Peace out.